Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by one of the most intrepid Starfinders this side of the galaxy, James Ballard.
I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
And we're also here with a very special guest, Mr. Joe Piscini.
Hello. How's it going?
You look like you weren't sure that we were talking about you there, Joe.
Yeah, I thought we had someone else on. I was excited.
What other Joe would you want us to bring on the show?
there's so many.
I didn't know that Joe was like James, where the company has just like 50 of them.
It's the J names. Once you generalize, it's all J names as far as the eye can see.
Is it generalized with the J too?
That's right. You got it.
Got it. Speaking of other things I've got.
Damn.
Oh, look at this transition, y'all. It's such a great transition. For those of you who are listening after the fact, I am holding up a copy of Galaxy Exploration Manual, the newest Starfinder hardcover product. Today, Joe is going to take us on a wild tour throughout the galaxy of options presented in this book.
Well, it should be very measured and calm, honestly. You know, there's plenty of excitement in the book. I'm gonna be as even keeled as I can and monotonous, you know, monotone. Right? Isn't that what we talked about before?
Uh-oh. Yeah, that's okay. You could be as monotone as you want, and James and I will bring all of the excitement and all of the hype. We're really good at that.
Can auto-tune me in post, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, if you can bring that Ben Stein energy, I'm down with it. But
dry, clear eyes or red eyes, try Galaxy Exploration Manual.
So tell us a little bit about Galaxy Exploration Manual. In the wide universe of the Starfinder RPG hardcover line, what design space does this book offer to customers?
This is the book you want if you look at all our cool setting stuff and go, that's pretty cool, I like that. And you look at all our player options that are themed to specific packed worlds, and you know, you like playing a Vesk because they're from the Vescarium, and that you think that lore is cool. But you want to just eventually point your starship kind of out there and just go and see what's in the galaxy. This book will take you there and tell you what is in the broader galaxy. It's all about homebrew stuff, sandbox stuff, exploration, right? That's it's in the name for a reason, right? it's the open-ended answer to a lot of calls we've had from people that love our pre-written stuff but want to make their own things. And we our audience kind of tends to be in three parts, we think, where there's folks who like the APs and sticking to what's in the core rule book and the sort of setting stuff that we provide. There's another group that is doing entirely their own thing with just the rules, you know, lifting the rules and maybe even leaving some of those, tweaking those as they go, which is totally cool. And then somewhere in the middle where people are taking maybe an AP, and then like I did with my group, we did two volumes of Dead Sons, and then we went to the third volume of Dawn of Flame and just made the story work because that's what we wanted to do. And you can do whatever you want because it's a wide galaxy. And so, yeah, this book is all about, it's also, it has notes of like a game mess. I keep looking at it over here. That's what I'm looking at. I actually, quick note to Jason Tondreau, fellow Starfinder developer, who let me borrow his hard copy because I don't actually have mine yet. I've been working off the PDF. And I said it was for this, but it is. But what am I doing other than kind of holding it here? I just wanted to see it in person. So thanks, Jason Tondreau, for that. Appreciate you. But yeah, there's definitely hints of a Game Master guide here because there are a lot of tables and a lot of, here's what you can do when your players go, we want to go check out a new system that no, not from near space, not from the packed worlds, one that's brand new and only unique to us. And so this will give you the tools to do that. But it also is for players building characters. There's tons of player options in here too.
You know, it's interesting that you brought up Game Mastery Guide, because when I looked at this book, I felt like it was like a crazy combination of Ultimate Campaign and like Ultimate Wilderness from first edition is kind of the vibes I got.
Yeah, those are fair vibes, I think. The first edition Pathfinder Game Mastery Guide was the book, the first Pathfinder book I picked up when I wasn't playing Pathfinder for my other game. I know, can you believe it? It was, I love me some tables. I love random generation. I like being inspired to create things of my own. And so this is our Starfinder version of that. And again, for everybody, really. Yeah.
That's fair.
I mean, yeah.
Well, do you want us to take us on like a pleasure cruise throughout the contents of this book?
About to ask if I could.
Oh, well, please take the helm of the ship and put on your fancy captain's hat. As we both know on this show, James and I both know, you can't actually be captain without a proper hat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dang. I left my go-to alien hat.
Hurry, get the carrot top prop box.
Yes, I put it aside for this. I was told I couldn't use it. We've got three chapters in here, basically. On your left, you'll see chapter one. Out the window there, and that is called Exploring the Galaxy, and that's going to be, if you're just here for the player options, not all the player options are in here, they're spread throughout the book, but a good number of them are here. This is where you want to go. This has a character background generation system, which steps you through a bunch of different inspirational ideas for where your character comes from, what's important to them, what got them adventuring, all that kind of stuff. Then you've got class options for all 10 classes, which I like to say, even though I know there's more coming, but that is the 7 in the core rulebook and the 3 from Character Operations Manual. We have options for all 10 of those classes, new options for them in here. We also have exploration-themed equipment, and then an exploration subsystem that is going to feature somewhat in the thing that I always call Kingmaker from Space, but we all know is called Horizons of the Vast.
That's coming out like imminent, right? Like it's pretty soon. Isn't it like next month?
Trademark. You know, I'll leave it to the schedulers to tell you when things are coming out.
That's actually very fair.
The West Coast soon.
Yes.
Soon. So I see there's like a fancy background generator in chapter one where I get to roll lots of dice and you'll tell me everything about who I was and where I grew up. Can I like roll on this and you can tell me all about my origins and my homeworld and stuff?
Let's do it. Let's step through it. I love doing this. So
all right.
Let's start with your home world. Roll a D% if you got one.
All right, here we go. I got a D%. I got a 89. Huh, that's the year I was born.
Me too.
Good start. Whoa. Ooh.
All right, so your society, this is about your place of origin. Your society comprises a utopia built and maintained by the labor of hidden slums. You might come from either side of this social divide, fallen or climbed from one to the other, or just be unaware of the division.
Live in Philadelphia. That's my actual life.
Yeah, that's just a tarot reading at this point.
Yeah. And that's what's cool. Jessica Catalan wrote these, and she's an all-star freelancer for us. And what I love, she kind of did what we did with the Deck of Many Worlds a little bit, is in each of these, there's options within each one, right? So you just got one hook that's really like, you know, are you part of the labor of hidden slums, or are you in the hoi polloi? Like, do you even know it exists? Like, there's all these little things that you can tweak. So even if you got that result again with a new character, you could completely change what it was.
All right. Speaking of new results, what's my next thing I got to roll for?
We got a major event. So something that kind of shaped you.
All right. So I'm from the slums. My it's great stuff. Okay. And I got a 63 this time.
All right. 63 is you seek revenge against someone who wronged you. They might have slandered you, robbed you, hurt your family, killed your pet. Whatever they did, you're furious, and you believe whatever repercussions they faced were inadequate.
God, am I John Wick?
You might be.
You're like John Wick.
Oh, no. All right.
Let's see who your influential associate was.
God, please don't be my dog. That's bad. 9.
9? Oh, that's like you rolled 3d6. Yeah?
Yeah,
it's 9. It is 9? Okay. So this is a socially awkward loner that taught you an important lesson. They're independent and capable of battling loneliness. They might be an exile, a hermit, or an introverted intellectual. They've been hurt or taken advantage of by others in the past, but they trust you.
Oh no. So I've gone from being John Wick to like, what's his name? Dennis and Always Sunny.
Yes.
Okay. What's next?
The last bit here is, we'll just roll it once, I guess, but party relationships. So this is to help you kind of establish your relationship with other people in the party. Mm-hmm. So let's see what your relationship is to one other person in the party you'll be adventuring with.
All right, this will be with
Adventure Dog.
This will be with James. I got 20 on the nose.
20? So you and this character used to be enemies, but over time you became friends. You're brutally honest with each other, and you might regularly mock or tease each other or bring up past the figure. But when push comes to shove, you have each other's backs.
That is literally just what we are, except for the enemies part. Everything else is the same.
No. We were kind of enemies when we drove to Gen Con that one time, and you hated everything about how I drove, remember?
Yeah, because it was bad.
Well, no, listen. Just because I got honked at by everybody on the road going to Gen Con on my turn to drive, and then I took us on a wrong turn where we end up being like 4 hours later than we should have, doesn't mean that I am probably absolutely the worst driver in our friend group.
I don't mind the wrong direction. I'm fine with that. The reason why we're getting honked at was Alex was in the left lane, the passing lane, for like 3 hours, and I was getting flipped off constantly.
Fair.
At least you didn't go the wrong way down the one way.
Yeah, we didn't do that. I like exploration. That part was fine.
there's exploration and there's exploration, yeah, for sure.
Yes, that's fair. It was great. We went all the way up north and then went all the way down south and then had to loop around like a fishing hook.
Oh, jeez.
But
just wanted to spend more time together, I'm sure.
Listen, you know what? It was a really hard year. I needed that locked in a small space with James time. Anyway, speaking about exploring, the next part of the book is all about exploring character options. Right? Mm-hmm. Right?
That's right. Good segue. Excellent segue.
I try. All right. So James, like, I know that we looked at this and there's some really dope ones here. So rather than making poor Joe talk about his babies, let's gush over a couple of them. Any you want to talk about, James?
Sure. I like just going down the list alphabetically because that's how I read them, because I read in order like a normal human being. Ooze forge. being a biohacker, being able to turn into oozes and have that same ability to split is really cool. And I think it's gated at the right level and there's less of the limitations that come with generally being oozy in this setting or most game settings. So
I can summarize most of the biohacker options in this book as being like the mad scientist that I wanted in the core biohacker that wasn't there. So I like most of these options. They're pretty cool. For me, the next section is the envoy. And for me, James and I both agreed that the absolute best one in this entire book is it's called Take Them Alive. It's a 6-level thing. And you basically pick someone and everyone who attacks that person, their attacks do non-lethal damage. It's great. Let me tell you how many times our friends are like, we're going to fight this guy. Like, we need him alive. We're going to fight him with our lethal weapons.
I'm not taking a -4. What do you want me to die?
That's a 20. So that one right there is I would love to say that it's going to see use at our table. I feel like it's only going to see use at our table if James or I take it.
Yeah.
But when James and I play Envoy, if I was actually, I don't know if Rocco would take it. Rocco was kind of like the worst. Rocco is my Bernieri Envoy. She got to watch her husband get murdered in Signal of Screams. Her husband was my first character who got brutally murdered, and then to have a second character, great stuff. But how about mechanic?
Artificial pilot. I like that a lot because I've had some experiences where people aren't super hyped about the vehicle driving part, and just to be able to hand that off or have the ability to, I think is very helpful in smoothing that over with some people that aren't into it. I love it. I bought a tour bus through all of society because it didn't say I couldn't. So
my favorite part about that is that there was literally an adventure where we skipped the entire hazard section because we just drove over it on a bus.
A hover bus. It doesn't matter that it's icy. It's a hover bus. Bye. That's 20,000 credits I ever spent.
There you go.
It was a lot of money, but so the next section is the Mystic. There are two new connections in here. Xeno Ambassador is pretty cool. It's honestly like one of those things where it's like, huh, you mean there wasn't a Mystic connection about just being like together? And it happens sometimes with game design where you see like a thing, you were like, why is this not core?
Yeah, we've hit it in different ways, in more minor ways, but you're absolutely right that it makes perfect sense as a Mystic connection. So it was a nice add for us.
Yeah, especially one that gives culture and diplomacy with like just, it's so good. I love it. I like natural linguists where you can just talk to whoever you want. It's like, oh, I can talk to you. It's fine. Mm-hmm. I am the communication device.
I like Trailblazer in there because it's so biome heavy and the biomes in this book are a big part of my shtick. They're kind of the influence of the Deck of Many Worlds, which lets you make planets on the fly. Same deal here. Like, this is a big part of that. And so having something that hooks into that definitely feels exploration-y and specific to this book, but also usable in other places. which is important, right? We can't just have everything be, yeah, what's up?
Oh, I was gonna, I agree completely. That's all.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha.
I do want to run something by you. I always have this issue with commune spells. If you were to commune with a planet, what do you think a planet would be able to tell you about things? Like, event things that matter at a human scale?
That's an interesting question.
No, so like the setup is, we have people that try to use like Stone Tell, and it's like, yeah, what does this unseeing, unthinking cloud of dirt know about time?
Yeah, it's going to be a weird conversation, I think. Communing with a planet, an entire planet too, definitely a weird thing. I was looking at that spell before we made this book. It's there are specific mechanical things it can tell you, but I think it would give you some weird responses that you could interpret. You know, like a planet is a big biological entity, right? And mm-hmm. So you could say my ankle kind of hurts, but it's not my ankle, it's this continent. Then it doesn't hurt. It's maybe got an unnatural presence of some magical force there or something. I don't know. It's a good question. I'll think more on it.
One answer I really like comes from a SCP article that I read not too long ago. It's like the SCP was like it was like a Mother Earth kind of like entity born out of the collective unconscious of all the living biomass on the planet. That just seems really cool to me. Like, oh, but then again, planets that are dead wouldn't be able to talk to you. So maybe that's not the best answer either. Come here, moon, talk to me. Well, maybe I'm not dead. Galarian's moon. Yeah, I'm dead. Sorry, you need to speak with dead too. But so going back to class options, James, aren't you like super into like the lashes and stuff in this book? This guy must have been super dope to you.
I like that how they look thematically, and this makes them more appealing to take. Anytime you use lashes, there's just like with whips in the original Pathfinder, there's always like, oh, I can do this, but can't do this. And it's a little bit of word juggling. So just to make it flat out more effective in certain ways, I think eases that a bit too.
For other things that are like super cinematic and cool, Solarian get heavy landing, which is basically the superhero landing as a revelation. Yeah. You use your gravity power and you fall from a high place and go boom, and then all the gravity you disperse from like taking less fall damage gets like added to you, and you just beat people up. So again, Solarian is the crazy cinematic class. I approve.
Yeah.
I know I'm going to skip over Soldier here because I just want to talk about the Technomancer. I love their options.
Yeah.
Technomancer has such cool options, just like imbuing your spells with toxins, getting more versions of meta magic. There's just so much to do with them now. They feel like they're finally hitting that stride of where the utility and here's everything that you can do. Like it's starting to hit that stride where you're just like, well, why don't I just mind thrust it?
I think that instant upgrade is going to be something that a lot of Technomancers end up taking. Like, I'm just going to magic an armor upgrade for you. Like, eventually you get to the point where you're like, oh, we need to fly? Magic jetpack. Couldn't you just cast fly? Yeah, but magic jetpack.
You know, or just, there's so many, like, upgrades that you could take, like things that give, like, damage resistance or, like, allow you to carry stuff differently that seems really minor until you actually need it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's that horizontal spreading of ability instead of that vertical power climb, which is where I think it's kind of the most fun to be a Technomancer. It's just like, wow, you can do that. You know,
that comes back to the exploration theme, right? Like if you're constantly planet hopping, if you're going all over the galaxy, some days you're going to need some heat resistance, some days you're going to need cold resistance, so on and so forth. So
I'll build a better you with magic. Rewinding backward to Soldier a little bit, because Soldier is like an awesome class and everybody deserves to talk about it. The new fighting style is cool. It reminds me of some of the ones from Calm, where like they have benefits that aren't just about like punching people. They like, these are actually applicable in multiple scenarios. Like I feel like Hunter is the same way. Of course I'm biased because I wrote Hunter, but ignoring the humble brag, like, you know, you get, oh, difficult terrain is easier for me to move by. That's just cool. And I also really like a lot of the gear boosts that are in here. Like I'm a big fan of like, I shoot you twice with a quick reload weapon for double shot, or just some of the names of these are great. Like one bullet left. like I just see that and I'm like, you know what, I too sometimes have only one bullet left. Also, this is probably one of my favorite pieces of art in the book for the soldier. It's this little Yusoki who's like got like a combat knife and is like just looking like he's trying so hard to survive. And this is going to be dumb. One of the reasons why I like it is that I love when artists like take a minute to try to figure out how to draw shoes on things that don't have human feet. And yeah. The shoes on this one are actually really good. So I'm like, all right, I noticed you. Whoever drew this, if you're listening to this episode, I see you. I know the work you put into this. Good job.
Yeah,
for that's a good idea.
I was about to say for the Vanguard, I don't know what she's hitting with her shield in that piece of art. But we have somebody in one of our games who's using lampreys as like their like bond, and it just looks like she's slapping a pit of lampreys.
Oh, that's really good. Here's a quick look for all the people who are watching this on our live episode. She's super cool.
I think it's vines, but it looks like lampreys.
They definitely look like thorn vines, like yeah. In Sleeping Beauty with when Maleficent raises the thorn walls. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. I mean, let's go with lampreys. That's really funny.
There's also some abilities that allow vanguards to do better with skills or to get more chances with them, mm-hmm. Which I think are kind of my favorites, because right now I'm in a storm game, and that's kind of where our vanguard really feels like they're out of their sorts is, oh, I need to know things. Nobody told me that, but I want to help because we're all dumb.
we truly are dumb, but you know what? Who's not dumb? It's Dr. Raptor.
He's a real doctor.
listen, I legitimately got that medical degree and nothing else from my homeworld. Also, yes, his first name is Doctor, his last name is Raptor, and he's a doctor, so he's Dr. Raptor.
Gotcha.
I also have the medic archetype, so like I'm mechanically a doctor too, and nobody can take that away from me.
That game is so dumb because I'm an operative, but I profess in soldier, so everybody thinks I'm a soldier. Also, I have a negative intelligence modifier, so I'm terrible at skills.
Hey. It's really good. But do you know who's not terrible at skills? This witch warper. Look at this art. Like this lady just stepping through dimensions with her gun. And she's like, you know what? It's time to warp some witches.
That was one of my favorite sketches to come in. I was like, yep, the artists are understanding what we're going for here.
Yes.
They're picking up what we're putting down and making it look cool.
And that's how you know your game is successful. Because when the artists can look at what you're doing and they're like, oh, I can copy this feel. Then mm-hmm. you're like you're popular enough that an artist can get you, which is good. Speaking yep. of things that you can get, swap ammunition, like
yeah.
that's great. My question is there a reason? Like, I mean, technically a grenade is ammo for a grenade launcher. Could I just like swap my enemy's bullets with the grenade, and when they try to fire?
It's got to pick two weapons with the same type of ammo.
No, so my sorry. Exploits.
You'll find a loophole. I have faith.
No, I have to write a loophole. Let's be real.
No, you just take a different type of grenade. You take a gravity grenade that lowers gravity, so then they shoot it back at you, and then you can run away.
Oh my gosh, the big brain.
Yeah.
So, James, you've played more Witch Warper than I have. Are any of these Witch Warper paradigm shifts things that Joseph Luke would take?
No, because Joseph Luke is a piece of garbage. He's just a very rude...
I hope that's a character name and not a...
it's a character. It's okay. A Witch Warper that I played who was just a real terrible,
he was a squid person. He was a squid.
And his name had to be Joseph?
Tree. Yep.
Really?
Yeah. He sometimes let us call him Joe Luke, but mostly Joseph Luke. But yeah, he was a Squidbilly Idge Tickery. Yeah,
he was good. Great, he was character. Just terrible. He would just go down hallways and just destroy them because, well, there's copper in the walls and that's worth money. Kind of like daisy chain all these segways together to make a monster truck out of segways. He was a very terrible person. But yeah, anything that lowers spell resistance in this game is great because a lot of the spells do have spell resistance. So Shred Defense is one of those things that you see more value as you go higher up, but you might not realize this can be an issue at lower levels.
Definitely. I'm a really big fan of Dimensional Medic just because the flavor of taking someone's injured wounds and swapping them with wounds that have already been healed is really cool. I love when Witch Warper does stuff like that, where it's like, I'm just going to go and do this thing. Transfer Affliction is another one where it's like, hey, I have the cold. Whoop, you have the cold now. James is like, if only.
This isn't the worst sickest I've ever been, so I'm fine.
That's fair. So the next after that is the exploration system, wherein your team wrote an entire rules system for exploring galaxies and solar systems, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's not just it's finding them too, because that's part of the difficulty, I think. At least if I were GMing and my party wanted to just, like, they asked me, where are we going? What are we doing? I could give them this system and say, you decide, you find out. Like, first of all, find a destination, then explore it, they get there, explore it, and find out where the gravity wells are, where the main points of interest are likely to be. Then go to those and analyze them from orbit. And then finally, you can be on the ground and exploring hex by hex kind of thing. That just steps, I like the way that steps you through that kind of thing, because otherwise it can be really overwhelming, I think, to be, or you just end up, you can obviously just say, like, you go to a place and there's a world there and here's what the world's like, because we give you the tools to build the world in a bit. But I think this feels more natural, and it's also something so Jason Tondreau say, I think, on Twitter about, you know, it also leaves open the opportunity for, you know, maybe you've come to a system, you've identified that there's like three gravity wells and you've only gone to one of them and found out that it's a lava planet or something. You still don't know about these other things. Like, there's still more to learn, and you might've even missed one of those scrap. There might be another planet out there that nobody even knows about yet. So there's lots of opportunity there.
That's what actually I was going to reference. I saw that post by Jake too, and he commented that, like, in shows like Star Trek, they press a couple buttons and then everybody knows everything about the solar system that they're in. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Starfinder, like, you have to actually go and uncover it. And that kind of makes things a little bit easier on the GM, because now the GM doesn't have to have a whole system prepared all at once. They can just be like, your range isn't strong enough on those sensors. Try again later. Which I think is really good, because anything that makes my life easier when I'm trying to wrangle the Teenage Wasteland players is great.
Well, and as a player too, I feel like I'm more invested if I'm helping build those things. If I'm taking actions that actually construct the stuff in front of me, rather than the GM just telling me what they came up with, it feels more collaborative. And I, as a player, I always enjoy that. And as a GM, because it's less work, quite frankly.
Indeed. I enjoy less work. Now, if other things I don't like to do, but my players love, is to have lots of equipment. And this book has lots of equipment options. Also, this is probably the best pair of shoes I've ever seen drawn in any role-playing game. Not even because of those crazy spikes, just the shoes themselves look comfortable and good. I like them.
Yeah, I didn't know you were such a shoe art aficionado, or I would have maybe collected some to bring you.
So listen, there are two types of people. There are people who pay attention to other people's footwear, and there are people who don't. And paying attention to footwear can tell you a lot about the person, because it tells you about how much money they have. It tells you about, like, how far they've gone. It can give you an idea to what type of jobs they do. You should always take a glance at someone's footwear if you want to learn about them, because it'll usually tell you more than any other article of clothing they're wearing.
And in this case, how much it'll hurt when they kick you.
Yes.
Awful spikes on it, yeah.
Yes. Now, gosh, man, can you imagine trying to wear those shoes anywhere that wasn't, like, I hope that those spikes are made out of, like, nanobots, and, like, they can click their heels together like Dorothy and the spikes retract.
Yeah, otherwise, just like Dorothy did with her spiked shoes.
Also, I love that the sunglasses from Spy Kids are in this book. Like, the ones that the little boy with curly hair goes, like, goes, like, great stuff.
Yeah, this is some of my favorite equipment art. It's just so detailed and rich. Kind of want it bigger than it even is here. One of my favorite items here is the Trendsetter's Guide, which is basically like your Lonely Planet book for various. I just like the idea that exists in this setting, and that it's there's commercial travel and exploration, as well as, you know, adventure level, you know, murder hobo stuff going on.
That's very fair. And there's a lot of cool equipment here that goes all the different types, lots of neat stuff. And then that's the end of chapter one.
That's it.
Chapter two.
Hey, that background
only took us 30 minutes. Oh, I've never seen this background before in my life. I don't talk about it.
Same here. I don't know.
For those of you who are listening at home and don't get the visual joke, Joe has the art for the chapter two spread behind him as his backdrop, and I'm just being a jerk. It's fine. I'm sure he's over it. So there's like a whole section on building worlds. And if I'm correct, this is loosely based off of the Deck of Many Worlds, right?
You are 100% correct. How did you know? Who told you?
Honestly, about five people on the forums when I read the forums.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, this is the pitch of this book was like, what if we took the Deck of Many Worlds and made it into a book, and went from there. So the Deck of Many Worlds, for people who don't know, is just a deck of cards, a Starfinder accessory that lets you build worlds, science fantasy worlds, with adventure hooks and resident species and threats and different attributes and different biomes. Like it builds it from like physical attributes to cultural attributes. And so this chapter two does the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's called Infinite Worlds because you can basically make nigh infinite worlds. And it does start with a way to roll up a random world from the jump.
What if your player was expecting an entire chapter on Witchwarper options, though?
That would be fair of them. they just missed it. You got to turn left at Albuquerque. A few pages back is where you'll get those Witchwarper options. So they're not too far, fortunately.
That's fair.
But yeah, you just roll up. And like anything else, you can kind of make decisions on the fly. It's like, oh, I rolled a gas giant. Well, I want a terrestrial world, so we're just going with that. And you can do that with gravity and atmosphere, and then the biomes that are present. You might have like a mono world, very Star Wars-y, like I said before, a lava planet or a forest world, a forest moon, sure. Mm-hmm. Or you can roll a few times on that table and get like a interplay of maybe you get a couple results that are the same, and that tells you there's more of that.
Indeed. Now, one of the things I like is that all of these biomes have like their own cool little like random things to roll, but they also have their own unique little flares. Like the airborne section has airborne delicacies, and one of them is flamethrower roasted jelly bird.
Yep. So we encourage the authors for each of these biome pieces to throw in a little sidebar of, you know, things ranging from like useful equipment that we've published already that you might want if you go to a place like that, or just random stuff like that is very flavorful and immerses people, both players and GMs, in that place. So aquatic has aquatic instruments, right? Which I would never have thought of, but the author did. And the Arctic section has Arctic celebrations, like the kind of parties that you have in an Arctic environment, like just stuff to really make you think about what it's like to be there. And especially in an alien way, right? Because you can see something like forest and be kind of like, yeah, trees, so what? But I think these biomes do a good job, thanks to the authors, of really making you think about what it's like to be on an alien forest and mm-hmm. what you can do with that in a Starfinder game.
As far as the little like flare boxes, it is the more mundane the terrain, or the more that most people would be experienced. It's more of like a guide list of how not to die.
But yeah.
Once you get into stuff that's a lot more alien to most people, you start getting more of those like, well, this is how you would do this. Because everybody can figure out, oh, you probably have forests around or festivals around harvest time and like forests and stuff like that. But it's like, oh, now we have to worry about that in the desert. How do I make this mm-hmm. interesting? I don't know how that sausage works in the cooking part, but I would be excited to learn. There's a Skyfisher blood sausage. That's a blood sausage that's bind it with the flesh of it. Which is wild to me, but you know, it's alien cuisine, right?
That's a very alien cuisine, yeah. Maybe sausage was just the closest word to what it actually is.
Yeah, there you go.
There's
also a lot of cool player options for each of the biomes. Like there's a mm-hmm. list of aerial feats under airborne. The aquatic rules have a whole bunch of different underwater weapons. The Arctic stuff has like armors. It's neat. There's a good spread.
Yeah, we wanted stuff that was themed to the biome, but also that you could use anywhere. Now, obviously the aquatic weapons are going to be underwater somewhere and they're most effective there, but something like airborne feats, people are flying everywhere. So mm-hmm. you're gonna be able to use those anywhere. Vehicles are all over the place. For instance, there's a bunch of creature companions. A couple of these biomes have creature companions that come with them, and they can, of course, go anywhere with you. And you didn't find them in a forest or an undead planet. You found them in a zoo and freed them or something. There's lots of opportunities to take this stuff. Again, we wanted to make sure it was for players, not just GMs, because we do have a lot of tables. I see some right there.
Oh, I was talking about Rambo Manor over there.
Yes. that's good, Amanda. I love it. If it bleeds, he can kill it.
he's Rambo Mander. I love him. He's my new totem art. That sounds good. I don't know if that's a good term. Soul bound art piece. I'll come up with something. I probably won't. Other things are like one of the spells here is called Tectonic Shift. That makes me laugh because it's basically Starfinder Stumblegap. And James and I have like a history with Stumblegap. We have a friend who played a diviner wizard in Carrion Crown who would only cast Stumblegap for the first like three levels.
Right, hey, in front of the melee combatants. Yeah.
Oh, maybe not so much then.
let me tell you how many times James and I stumbled to the Stumblegap. Many.
Many. Okay. I was waiting for the number.
Many. It was years ago. I lost count. But one thing I haven't lost count of is how many times that Starfinder manages to use really interesting, like, not core species, like this Patra over on book 79. Or page 79. I expect to see Skittermanders in books because everybody knows how popular they are. They're basically Starfinder's goblins at this point. But I'm always happy how often the Vescarium core species pop up, like the Patra, the Ijtikris, sometimes just weird random things. Like, I don't even know. Like, there's a Vlaka with a metal leg in Starship Operations Manual. Good stuff.
I would say. Yeah. John Compton's really good at that. Picking out, and we just ran a survey for the species that people are most interested in learning more about, and we definitely have that list to look at when we're like, you know what, we've done, because even Patra at this point, we've done a lot of different Patra. It's like, maybe we'll do an SRO for this random class option, because we can.
Nice. I appreciate that. I also really appreciate this crazy dude floating in space with the anglerfish augmentation out of his spine.
Yeah,
good stuff.
Oh, the slime lashes are so cool. I want them all in real life.
Yeah, you told me that you were really excited about these. Tell me more.
Yeah, they're just little flicky tendrils for your hands. And you just go grab stuff that are just out of reach, you know? Drop your keys, no problem.
I mean, they're lashes, so that's right, apparently. What about this Rave Kid's shoes? The angler fishes on page 83. What do the shoes tell you? I need to know now.
Oh, on his?
Yeah.
His shoes. He is he's very interested in making sure that he has an appearance that really stands out. They look expensive. Like, they go all the way up to his ankles, and they match his whatever that shirt. He's not wearing a shirt. It's kind of a V, and then to the back. So I'd say that he's probably really trendy and cares a lot about his appearance based on those shoes.
Gotcha. Fascinating stuff. You should do an episode that's just this. I'll bring you the shoe art and you bring the interpretations.
All right, but you have to make sure you get shoes from a whole bunch of different species. They all just can't be human shoes.
Yeah.
If you can convince whoever is ordering art now to get whatever a Bantrid shoe is, you should do it. I don't know what a Bantrid shoe would look like. Tell John Compton to start dreaming.
I love the companion on page 95. I don't know what it is, and I've only known about it for 15 minutes, but I will die for it.
The companion it's like a starfish, but with things coming out of its face.
Yeah, it's so. I hate its design. I don't know where to look at it, but that intrigues me on it. I'm like, what eye is the front eye? I really like that. It looks very alien.
Well, that's the Tetalolan, then, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It chimes softly when its fern-like pieces are rustled, and it can make some weird noises and unsettle everyone.
Interesting. I also make weird noises when ruffled. So rewinding back to page the subterranean stuff, James and I were both laughing so hard, but in a good way, that launching is a weapon fusion in this book because it's basically Ash's little pistol. She
just rocket jumping.
And the best part is, it doesn't say what type of firearm it can go on. You can put it on a pistol, and it'll knock you just as far as if you put it on, a machine gun, which is really amusing to me.
Magic, baby.
Also, this piece of art for the urban section with this, crazy Tokyo Drift Akira style is great. This is another piece of art where, this one and whoever did the equipment, you got to be yo, come do more.
Yes, for sure.
Oh, that's totally the ramen stall from Blade Runner.
It is, absolutely.
Except it's in the Vescarium because you can see two Patra walking away from it, and then there's a Skittermander manning the Raymond's the ramen stall. So it's whoever that person is, he's definitely Starfinder Naruto being served by a Skittermander. It's really good.
Yeah,
I really approve of this. There's lots of good feats. There's an amazing picture of Zo, everybody's favorite undead host, under the weird section. Good job. And this has just got a lot of really interesting stuff that's kind of all over the place, but fun in a good way. But this book also has a system called Accord that is basically your reputation system in Starfinder, right?
A little bit. So Accord is one of the cultural attributes that you'll use for making your planets, your worlds. Along with magic, technology, alignment, and religion. And then within the Accord section of this book, which tells you, like, what's it like when a world has high accord, when everybody gets along? Is it because there's a tyrant telling them to with a, you know, gun in their face? Or is it because they're some kind of utopia, and so on? But, and that includes adventure hooks and all the, and all that stuff. But the rules element that we included here is a leadership system, which is what you're talking about, I think, which is 100%. You can lead an organization, whether it's, you know, I don't know, give me like just a business of some kind.
Golden League.
Or, yeah, or a Twitch stream, Twitch style stream, maybe, or network, say.
Don't tell Param. If Param finds out there's rules for running a Twitch stream, he will make us follow them. speaking of organizations, there's a leadership system too that's like 2 pages long. So that means it's officially less involved than the Pathfinder First Edition version, right?
Yeah, that may have been.
I do like how it gives good numbers of like followers and what you would be able to expect, because especially coming from society, there are specific boons that play off your fame.
Yes.
So just to be able to like at least mentally translate that, like around what your level is to that level, can give you an idea of how that plays into a greater game that might not have the same things, functions as society. So that was cool to see.
I also really like how they changed the term cohort into lieutenant. I think that was cool.
Yeah, little minor changes. We have one thing we've incorporated both in the exploration system in here and in this leadership system is downtime activities from Character Operations Manual. We love adding those as ways to spend time because so often you're traveling through space with nothing much to do except say, and then we're there.
Yes.
So I'm always keen to add interesting downtime activities that give you something that your character's doing for a day or a week. To make this setting feel more lived in, especially when you're exploring, right? When you are going to places in near space in the vast, you're spending a lot of time on your ship. So anything that can help fill those gaps with interesting storytelling opportunities, we're all about it.
Indeed. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the next couple pages are all about like metaphysical stuff, like alignment and magic and religion, right?
Yeah. Alignment kind of gives you a sense of hits you quick with all the nine alignments and what they might mean for a world. If you encountered a lawful evil world, what does that mean? Obviously, most worlds aren't sentient, though some are, but it gives you ideas for what that could be like. And then magic, of course, talks about what it's like to be in a low magic world, because maybe it's outlawed, maybe it doesn't work, maybe people just aren't familiar with magic there for some reason. Same with religion and technology. And again, they all have adventure hooks. So if you're a GM and you can create a whole campaign just based on any one of these hooks, or just a night's worth of adventure if you're doing an episode a week kind of Star Trek style campaign. And then of course, magic, you won't be surprised to learn that we added some spells in there. Religion has some armor upgrades. Technology has tech items, if you can believe that.
And so, video games.
So again, we put in a lot of player options in here in the book just to make sure everyone had something.
Very cool.
I am particularly fond of the armor upgrade that like changes based on the god that you worship, kind of like how the Weyden thing allows you to change yourself. Also, the Weyden one that allows you to change yourself anyway.
Yes.
They're all super flavorful and indicative. There's some that I think are definitely more powerful than others, and you might see a lot of people suddenly worship a faith.
Yeah, that's true.
But you know, I most of their scope is limited enough that it's not a big. It doesn't like break anything.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem.
Just like hoping.
You never know.
Goal, but you never.
I guess
you never
you'll know. You'll find out, and if you find out, then you're gonna have some fun times down the line with the old errata, right?
Yep, we got a system. We're not afraid to use it.
Now, speaking about things that we're not afraid to use, how about sandboxing?
So it's the sandbox adventure. That's the third chapter, and that is definitely GM-focused. No player options here. But if you want to know how and why to run an open-ended adventure, this is your chapter, and it's going to guide you through, using an example campaign, guide you through how to do. And it's written by Jason Tondro, who's one of our adventure developers. And then it was developed by Jason Keeley, one of our other adventure developers. So we got the dream team working on this repository of advice on how to design campaigns or just adventures, even encounters. And it builds on, you know, we didn't want to repeat what was in the core rulebook about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. This is definitely geared toward open-ended sandbox stuff. And then we also have a little bit of subgenre information, like if you want to run, again, like if you want your whole game to be cyberpunk, then you can read this and get a little guidance on that. Or if you just want to visit a space Western world 1 week or for a couple sessions, then you've got some advice there too. It's something we've toyed with. Obviously, you know, our APs will often have a sort of genre to them. So it's something we want to kind of experiment with more as we go forward.
Yeah, I like the settlement toolbox tables and the Starship quirks. I think those are some things that, especially if you're like, even if you're not necessarily new, but just not great at imagining like areas, you might think of like one or two things, but this allows you to flesh out pretty interesting either challenges or features of those areas.
Mm-hmm. The toolboxes are a whole nother, I forgot they're technically part of chapter 3. I think of them as an appendix, but yeah, there's drift encounters, which is definitely GM focused for when something needs to go wrong in the drift. Now you have some ideas. The NPC toolbox is also very GM focused, but like you said, the quirks are a lot of fun. And settlements, I like settlements for players too. Like if you're coming up with your backstory, maybe it's the place where you're from, what that might be like. And mm-hmm. starships, you know, if you, like you said, if you're short on ideas, this will change that. This will fix that. And then my favorite is the treasure toolbox, because those items are so interesting. Like each one of them has its own weird story behind it that you can imagine, or you can just sell it for the 25,000 credits, I guess. Like, yeah.
All right. I was going to heap praise on that, because that's one of the things where, like, when you're trying to make sure they get the proper wealth by encounter, you're like, and you find an extra credit stick that has this.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. To give something else.
All right. I'm rolling my treasure. Exactly. Tell me what I find, Joe.
How many credits is it worth?
I don't know. You tell me.
Okay. You give me your percentage.
95.
95. Okay. That's value varies. Because there are 5 D20 tables. So we'll just go with that. Okay. As your... Let's see. So that would be 15. So tiny robotic figures that act out popular Hollywood shows and movies.
Amazing.
Like a set of act figures that can enact your favorite.
So
scenes.
I've got like those really popular like Japanese anime, like all range motion figures. Like the one Param has of Deku, right? I don't remember what they're called. Do you remember what they're called, James?
No, I was thinking of like small soldiers where all the little action figures.
There you go.
Like,
somewhere like that.
All right. Well, I think with that, we've reached the end of the book and we have 5 minutes left. So I promised you that I would roll dice and you would make a world off of it, right?
Oh, yeah, let's do that.
All right. What page do it? All right. You go to the page. I won't even look. Boom.
I'm at the page. Roll percentage for what type of astronomical object this is. Like,
oh, right.
Or
an interstellar Denny's. Oh.
This is a 42.
42. That is a terrestrial world. So that is the most common. So standard terrestrial. Now roll twice for gravity and atmosphere.
All right, gravity 55.
That is zero gravity.
Okay, that's going to be a really difficult terrestrial world.
Yeah.
Atmosphere 76.
All right, thick atmosphere. So maybe the atmosphere helps hold people down. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how that atmosphere is staying there with no gravity. But
great question. Let's find out. All right, so let's see what biomes there are. This is a D12 if you have it, or we can.
Oh, a D12. No, I got a D12. I pulled out all the dice. 7.
All right, so that's a mountain world. We could stick with that, or if you want to roll another biome, we could go with another biome.
No, let's stick with the mountain.
It's a mountainous world. All right, so let's do cultural attributes. So a chord, roll it. Now you're on D6s if you have them.
I do.
Okay, D6 me. We got 6 different attributes. You can give me 6 numbers and I'll tell you.
3. Okay. 6.
Yep.
3. Okay. 6.
So it's lawful neutral. Lawful neutral, high magic, medium accord. So it's kind of earth-like in how people get along. Like there are probably nations and some get along and some don't. High magic, which might help explain how anything is here with low gravity. and then I forget your last number.
4.
Is 4, so that's medium religion. And then one more for technology. I'm going to roll it because I have a D6. Rolled for you. You got high tech. So also high tech.
The super tech keeps all the clouds in place.
Yes.
It's a bubble.
That's basically it. So, I mean, now we have all the what we need to know to go to any of those sections. We could go to the mountain biome and read about what, in fact, let's just go to the Mount Biome.
Let's do it. Come on. We got adventure hook. We got 3 minutes left. Let's go. Go.
So we need a, we can do D percentage for the inhabitants and a D20 for the adventure hook.
All right, I've got all three of those dice right here.
All right.
The D percent is 85 and the D20 is 6.
So this is populated by Urogs.
Okay, and that makes sense.
And the enemies, the threat species would be Skreesire. So they're those gross flying things that sire other gross flying things. And then your D20 was?
A 6.
6. All right, so worshippers of a mountain range are so heavily against the proposed development of the area that they plan to force crash an asteroid into its primary construction site, saying if they can't save it from slow death, we'll give it the mercy of a quick one.
Okay.
Which that is weird like on a medium religion world, but...
No, they're definitely the zealots. Everyone else is like, this is fine. No! Crash the asteroid!
You know how hard it is to crash an asteroid into a place that has zero gravity?
Urogs will figure it out.
It's da-da-da-da-da. Boom, boom. Yeah.
Weird side part about having an atmosphere, it's you would probably be able to explain it that the gas has more cohesion than anything, like water tends to stick together.
I like it.
Cohesion.
You have to, instead of to crash the asteroid, you have to actually strap a rocket onto the asteroid and fly. It's like in the episode of Futurama where they do that. They slap the asteroid onto the Planet Express and they fly it away. Yeah. So they slap someone's starship and you fly it into the settlement. And now the players have to engage in starship combat against an asteroid being flown by a starship in order to save the town.
The old slap and slam.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us, Joe. Where can people find you online?
I am Joe Adultman on Twitch and Twitter. Variously active on those. Otherwise, I'm a mystery and enigma. I don't exist except online.
Well, I mean, that's a great place to exist. Is there anything you'd like to shout out to before we wrap up this show?
Oh my gosh, just the authors of this book, which I won't name in full, but definitely check out that author list. They are incredible. They were a big part of this book being what it is. My colleagues on the Starfinder team are great too.
Nice, nice. Excellent. I would like to shout out, I'm running a Kickstarter. It is for the Starfarer Species Reforged. If you want to check it out, Google it. I'm not going to explain it because we are almost out of time and I value everybody's time. But James, where can people find out from more about No Direction if they want to hang out with us or bug me about my Kickstarter or harass Joe to make him roll worlds for them?
That would be our Discord. I don't know where to put the link. I guess I'll just throw it into the backup place we're doing.
Well, we don't have to worry about throwing them a link because we can just tell them to go to nodirectionpodcast.com and click the link there because it'll give you a one-way ticket straight to No Direction Discord Town. It is the chillest Starfinder, Pathfinder 2nd Edition, Pathfinder 1st Edition, and all-around geek community that you can find on Discord. You can quote me on that, and if I'm wrong, I won't acknowledge it. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in to watch us. Until next time, go beyond with No Direction.